Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sean says it's mandated. We have to say good afternoon to the suit. Okay, let's... Will you stop laughing?
He's still in the zone since the Alan Bestwick interview, so we did good.
Well, good. Okay. Put it on the website every week and make him think we did one each week.
Okay.
All right.
He'll never know.
Doug Gottlieb in just a few moments on the NBA playoffs. And the final half hour, Bob Buehner will talk more about the Baylor situation. Art Briles dismissed today. They actually, according to the report by Pepper Hamilton, Baylor coaches or staff met with the complainants. Are you, and or their parents? Are you kidding me? That's what I want to get into this with Bob about. Doug Gottlieb in a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
Here's the pitch. And a fly ball hit pretty well to center field. So well, in fact, Owings will look it and watch it go out of here into the Pirates' bullpen. David Fries hits his third home run, and the Pirates lead it in the fifth inning. It is 5-4. A bomb to the bullpen.
Greg Brown with a call on the Pirates radio network. The Pirates, in fact, are playing this afternoon. As a matter of fact, the Bucks are playing Arizona to close out that set. It is getaway day. The Phillies, of course, will have the Cubs tomorrow at Wrigley. And that's why Sean ends up with a four-day weekend. The Pirates, by the way, lead Arizona 8-3, starting the top half of the ninth inning. Okay, let's start with the NBA playoffs. Tonight, of course, a big one tonight for fans around here. The Penguins are playing Tampa Bay. Seventh and deciding game. The winner gets the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup Final. Meanwhile, Oklahoma City can somehow close out Golden State. So let's bring in Doug Gottlieb from CBS Sports. And, Doug, we have seen Oklahoma City win 7 of their last 9 games. Those 7 wins are against the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. What are we witnessing here?
I think people are figuring out that, one, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, when healthy, are as good as anybody who plays basketball. Two, the team has made some trades. You know, they made a trade that got them the pick to Steven Adams. They made a trade that got them Deion Waiters. They made some trades to change their roster the past couple of years. That's made them championship worthy. Remember, they weren't healthy. They haven't been healthy since they went to the final.
Right.
And three, like, hey, there's a reason Billy Donovan was a dominant coach at Florida.
Yeah.
Florida is not a traditional power in basketball. They're just not in college basketball. They were when he was there. They went to Final Fours with three kind of different styles. Like all of these things are like, oh, and maybe here's the last thing that's important that people aren't pointing out. When did we ever care about regular season record? Like how many wins you had in the regular season? Right? Don't get me wrong. It's important to get home court advantage and to win games in the regular season. But in terms of number of wins, like, I don't know when the only reason we're paying attention to it is because Golden State won 73 games, right?
Right.
And so maybe the lesson here is kind of like we argue this every year. And every year we have this, I think it's a dumb, do you play your guys in week 16 and 17 in the NFL, or do you rest them? And my answer has always, will always be, of course you rest them. Who cares one win here, one win there? The only thing that's important is, are you fresh? Are you rested? you know, fresh legs, fresh mind, you know, you play better sport. You play better at your sport. I think that it was all ego to go for 73, and that ego has been exposed.
Russell Westbrook, I'm going to ask the point guard that knows the game like a point guard should. So I've always felt that Russell Westbrook, the biggest plus for him is that he goes 100% all out. I always felt that the minus he had was that every once in a while
he goes 100% all. Yeah, he goes 100% all out.
Yeah, that the minus is that in going all out, sometimes he doesn't understand to change gears as a point guard.
Yeah.
Accurate or not?
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't really play point guard growing up. And, you know, they were at their best. When they went to the finals, in the fourth quarter, it would be James Harden who was their point guard.
Right.
So, look, he'll drive you crazy because he will take terrible shots. He will play too hard. He will force things. But he is, I think he's the most athletic, he's the most athletic athlete in professional sports, you know, all around. Like, he's powerful, he's quick, he's fast, he's indefatigable, you can't get him tired. He's unbelievable. And, he's a problem. So, yeah, look, there are things about him that you'd love to change, but, you know, like any player, you take the good with the bad. Like, You wish Kevin Durant was a little bit thicker and had a little bit bulkier. On the other hand, he's 6'10", 6'11", and so, yeah, maybe you'd like him to be thicker, but his length, he's unguardable on the perimeter taking jump shots. Like, you can be there, but he's still going to release the ball higher than you can defend. So, yeah, there's pluses and minuses. But it's pretty obvious that the pluses far outweigh the minuses.
Oh, completely. But you know, a point guard needs to understand tempo and change gears.
You know, yeah. He really did a good job last night of getting everyone else involved.
Yeah, he
and,
did.
And that is, look, that's, remember, Billy was a point guard. Yeah. And I think Billy has done a really good job of, you can't run a full frontal assault against Russell because he'll fight you on it. And I can't give enough credit to Billy Donovan. Whether, you know, everything they do is his coaching or not, the fact that a guy who, however successful, had never coached in the NBA, has gotten buy-in from these guys slowly over time, despite the fact that they haven't succeeded in fourth quarters in the regular season, that's great coaching. And it's been fantastic to watch. It probably helps them. You know, it probably helped him, the fact that they didn't win so many games in the fourth quarter, because then he could go to the table and go, hey, look, we try it your way. It doesn't work. How about we try it my way, right?
Yeah, exactly. What do you make of Steph Curry at this point?
Well, there's a couple things. I think he's been a little bit exposed. I mean, look, Steph has, before the series, you know, people got onto Russell Westbrook because Russell Westbrook said, look, he's a shooter, nothing we haven't seen before. And then he went on and said, like, you got to guard him, you know, four or five steps behind the three-point line. You got to be physical with him. So people are like, well, what do you mean he's a shooter that we haven't seen? We've never seen a guy shoot that well. The point was, as much as we all respect the playmaking, shot making, the fact that he's changed in many ways what people think is a good and what people think is a bad shot, or the fact that a guy that thin and that undeveloped physically coming out of college can compete at the NBA level, he's definitely changed our perspective on what can and can't be successful in the NBA.
Yeah.
He still has his limitation, and he struggled to finish over their athleticism. He struggled with their bot. You know, they're banging him off the basketball, and that wears you out. Those are like body shots. And when a guy's missing jump shots, who's normally the greatest jump shooter we've ever seen, I'm sure that's part of it. They're also making him guard. And what happens with so many people is we don't actually watch games anymore. Everybody just watches highlights and looks at stats. They're like, well, you know. Steph Curry makes it every time he shoots it. Well, yeah, okay, that's actually just a highlight. He leads the league in steals, so that doesn't actually mean he's a good defense player. That means he's a very smart player, very quick hands, but he doesn't actually lock in defensively one-on-one very well. So I think the fact that they went for 73 wins, they're doing a great job of bodying him, making everything difficult for him, the wear and tear of the season, the wear and tear of the series, and maybe a little bit of the knee of the ankle. I think all of that has factored into where he's not right. And let's also point out, like, Draymond Green has been a huge key to their success the past 2 years.
Yep.
Draymond Green has been crummy. Forget about the kicking guys or whatever. Right. He hasn't been good enough. And that completely changes the dynamic. This is, there are three guys that are dangerous on that team that can beat you.
Right.
Draymond, Steph, and Clay. Yeah. And if two of them aren't hitting on all cylinders, they're not going to be good enough.
If, I'm not a big believer in plus minus, but sometimes it jumps at you. Green's minus 62 his last seven quarters. Cleveland, you and I both know that a really good three-point shooting team, it's part of their arsenal. A decent three-point shooting team hits a couple and it's fool's gold. Has Cleveland hit fool's gold here?
I don't think so. I think that what happened was Atlanta wanted to take away all their paint touches. So they didn't want to let them get layups and dunks.
Right.
And wanted to make them make the extra pass because they hadn't done that in the regular season. And Cleveland did. They changed their space and they changed their movement. They played differently than they did the regular season. And they just hit three after three after three after three. And, I mean, even LeBron hit some threes, which he hadn't really done all season. And then Toronto kind of overreacted in game one and game two where they guarded everybody. And, you know, Cleveland got dunk after dunk after dunk after dunk.
Right.
So I think some of it is just the game itself and how and adjusting to how the other team's playing defensively more than anything. But, yeah, I mean, they're not a 25 three-point. Nobody. There's a reason that they hit more threes than anybody's ever done it because that's not really who they are.
Right.
But if forced to be that team, they can shoot it maybe better than their numbers would tell you.
What are you seeing in Toronto? What did they do adjustment-wise? I mean, the two stars came up big at home.
They played really, really hard.
Yeah.
I thought they played very, very hard. I thought, you know, Biombo's energy, shot blocking, completely just energized the arena. And then, yeah, I mean, like, look, Lowry and DeRozan took a little bit better shots and made better shots. And, you know, Kyrie wasn't nearly as dynamic as he's been. They made Kyrie guard. They made him take more difficult shots to catch him out of the lane. I thought they did a really good job of adjusting, and they won two. That said, that's a little bit of fool's gold because I don't see them being able to do that two more times against the Cavs. But they proved this wrong so far because boy, it looked like an ugly series the first two games.
Yeah, I mean it did. By the way, your note on highlights, I've had people ask me when I'm getting ready to broadcast a Penn State season. They said, how much do you look at freshman highlights? I said, never.
Yeah, when you're watching a kid who's coming in to play at Penn State, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a really, you know, it's also like watching, you know, early season games, you know, for Penn State, you know, when they play one of the academies or they play, you know, a bye game, like that's not really telling how you play against elite competition. How you play when every down matters, when every shot matters. It's a different game. It's hard to define, but I think we can all see that this is a different level of basketball than is traditionally played.
That's why I like talking to you. You get right to it. Thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate it. Enjoy the show and your work all the time. Great respect for it.
Thanks so much.
Doug Gottlieb, CBS Sports, still to come, Bob Buehner. We'll talk about that and the Baylor situation with him in a moment. Right after the bottom of the hour, we'll do that. Penguins play Tampa Bay tonight, Game 7. Winner gets San Jose in the Stanley Cup Final. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Stock up for the Memorial Day weekend on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you thought 100 years in business was impressive, SMC is going to show you 101 is even more spectacular. Through the end of May, Sunbury Motors Ford is going to sell 101 new Fords by discounting every new Ford to the lowest price possible. Plus, give you more for your trade. And they're even open Monday Memorial Day from 9 to 1. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 42 new Escapes starting at $18,880. SMC is where you want to be if you want to choose from 85 new F-150s starting at $23,749, saving you up to $11,400. SMC is where you want to be if you want 0% financing for 72 months on Focuses, Fusions, Edges, Escapes, and Explorers. Now is the time to take advantage of Sunbury Motors' goal to sell 101 new Fords in May. 101 vehicles sold means you'll save more money than ever before. Sunbury Motors and the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for 101 years. Open Monday Memorial Day from 9 till 1.
Jump into summer by stopping at the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Incredible savings like Keystone Light 18-packs for only $8.95. That's only $2.99 a 6-pack. Seagram's Coolers now available in cans, just $9.99 a 12-pack. Brewers Outlet has a large beverage and craft beer selection, snacks, teas, fresh roasted peanuts, and the pickle bar. Why go anywhere else? So start the parties with Keystone for under 50 cents a can. Check out the Brewers Outlet weekly specials on Facebook. Enjoy, and thanks for the business. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Penguins and Tampa Bay tonight. The winner faces the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup Final. Also tonight, it is Oklahoma City trying to close out Golden State, but it's in Oakland tonight. It's the first time all year that the Warriors have lost two in a row. First time all year. But they have, and now they have their back to the wall. But the big story is Baylor firing head coach Art Briles. The athletic director has been suspended, but that's it. Only suspended. The Ken Starr was removed as university president, but he's been made chancellor and has been moved to the law school. Briles was flat out fired. The key portion of the 13-page report, I want to point out something very, very quickly. No names are named in the 13-page report. There are no names mentioned in the 13-page report. But the key portion is this. In certain instances, including reports of sexual assault by multiple football players, athletics and football personnel affirmatively chose not to report sexual violence and dating violence to an appropriate administrator outside of athletics. In those instances, according to the findings, football coaches or staff met directly with a complainant and or a parent of a complainant and did not report the misconduct. As a result, no action was taken to support the complainants, fairly and impartially evaluate the conduct under Title IX, address identified cultural concerns within the football program, or protect campus safety. That's, in the end, that's the big one. And you can talk about, you know, Title IX and cultural concerns all you want. The big one is protect campus safety. I mean, that is the bottom line. And the fact that they intervened and talked to the complainants, I mean, it's one thing for them to sit there and talk to the player. Right? But not to the complainant. That's not their job. They're not trained to do that. Especially with a crime as violent as this. We'll talk to Bob Buehner about that in a few moments. Bob will join us at 4:35, right after the sports bozo of the day. We'll have that on. But that is what it comes down to. The fact that coaches and staff, and by the way, we've talked about, evidently at Baylor, there have been other people let go. They just haven't named who's been let go. Other members of the chain and staff there evidently have been let go. There's also been some talk that Phil Bennett may become the interim head coach at Baylor. That, in my opinion, would be a bad move. He, by the way, is the defensive coordinator. In the last year and a half or so, he's made a couple statements about some players that have been involved in this. I'm sorry, you can't do that. He, you know, him becoming the head coach would not be the right move for Baylor. It would not be. I've said many times on the show, you know, I don't like, you know, I'm not big on Baylor's offense and so forth. That's just structural. But I have said many times in the program. That Baylor's one of those schools that seems to take on other teams' problems. Iwakuchu was a problem at Boise State. We know Sean Oakman obviously was dismissed here. So was Phil Taylor. But there are others that have ended up at Baylor. They've always seemed to have no problem taking on somebody else's problem. At some point when you do that, you just feel like you're on a path to then causing a problem yourself. Talent doesn't rule everything. Bob Buehner in a few minutes. We're brought to you today by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up for the weekend. It's Memorial Day. Come on, stock up. Believe me, you're going to need it just to get through the races on Sunday. Keep yourself sane. Stop laughing, Sean. We're also brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great time to go out and buy a car. Weather's great. Memorial Day weekend's coming up, and they're the best dealership going. Sunbury Motors. 101 years of excellence. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Normally, Brewers Outlet is with us on Friday. Well, we're not on tomorrow because of the Phillies and the Cubs. So we'll tell you, stock up for the Memorial Day weekend now. Go over to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. I don't care. But, you know, great selection of beer, imports, domestic, microbrews, wine coolers, water. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Snacks and the pickle bar is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Baylor firing, well, this is what they've done. They have suspended Art Briles with the intent to terminate. They can't announce it yet because he still has 8 years to go in his contract, and there's certainly contract language in there that they have to then go through as to how they either buy him out, negotiate it out, and then just plain fire him. So that's why that was phrased that way. Next, the athletic director has been is on suspension. Ken Starr, the president, has now been removed as the president at Baylor. He is now a chancellor at the law school and will teach a class at the law school. Others evidently have been fired, but they're staffed down the line, and those names were not released. The 13-page Pepper Hamilton report, by the way, did not name any names. I just want to make sure that, you know, as we go through this, people understand what we're talking about. Let's bring in Bob Buehner, my good friend. My friend, it has been far too long. Get your backside over here so we can get dinner here one of these days.
Well, absolutely. I was just thinking about that pickle bar over at Brewers Outlet, my personal favorite.
Yes, absolutely. The part I focused on in this report was this part right here. And that is the part where, in instances, according to the findings, football coaches or staff met directly with a complainant and or a parent of the complainant and then did not report misconduct. To me, that's the part that crossed way over the line that they had absolutely no business doing. Am I correct?
You are exactly correct. The last thing on planet Earth that a football coach should be doing, assistant coach, anyone affiliated with athletics, is trying to interview or meet with people who have made allegations that were their victims of a crime. That, you know, let that to the police, the prosecutors, the university officials, if the complainant was a student, people that are trained in this matter. It really, not only does it smell bad, but it really looks even worse. So, yeah.
All right, so yeah, so I mean, that's the part I focused on, that if I were to pick out the one part that would be the, quote, most damning part of it, it's that part right there. And the and then, of course, the other part where evidently there was discouragement about, you really want to go forward with this?
Yeah, that, you know, that just doesn't pass anybody's smell test. You know, one of the things that's really important to point out, Steve, in this whole thing is, first of all, Baylor is a private university.
Yes.
That's really important as compared to, say, a Florida State, where they had some, sounds like, related problems with a former quarterback and all of that. At a private school, they have much more leeway, much more latitude in how they handle situations involving personnel. That's number one. Number two, Baylor is a religious university, and their board of trustees is different than a board of trustees at a public university or a quasi-public university like Penn State. So what matters to the board of trustees at a private school and what is important to them may be far different than what is important at a public university. And I think Baylor fits into that category. And I think, as you indicated in the lead-in, that it's a contractual matter. These coaches' contracts anymore read like the novel War and Peace, like a long Russian novel. I mean, they're just pages and pages and pages.
That's exactly right. And that's why he actually signed 2 years ago a 10-year contract worth, I think, about $60 million.
And, you know,
and there's still 8 years to go in that contract, and you and I obviously are not privy to what the buyout is, to whether there's something else that has to be negotiated because we fired you with cause. I mean, we don't know what it says.
Yeah, it used to be that these coaches' contracts were almost just one leg above a handshake, and that, you know, you're here to coach football, here's how much we're paying you, now go get them. And now there's all kinds of what we call morality clauses, for lack of a better name, that are in these kinds of contracts. And there are two kinds of termination in private contracts. The one is for cause. And that means we've got a good reason, and it's spelled out in the contract as to why we're terminating you, usually involving crimes or misconduct or things, theft, for example. And then there's these morality clauses that says that, and they're broadly worded, that say anything that brings, that's involving morals and related matters, and it brings the university into disrepute or embarrassment, is also cause to terminate. And what they're probably doing now is sitting with some lawyers, Steve, going over that, as you indicated, and saying, well, under Clause 22, subsection A, it says this, and that means it's not without cause, and you have to owe us $60 million. And the other side saying, no, it is for cause, and we're not paying anything. And somewhere in the middle, they meet. And that's probably what we're having happening now.
As a district, as a former district attorney who knows the ins and outs of this, if you hear through the investigation that a third party met with the complainant that is affiliated with the accused, what do you think?
I right away, two things come to mind as a crime. And, you know, the laws of Texas and the laws of Pennsylvania are rather similar in this regard. The first thing I think of is obstructing justice. You know,
exactly.
And obstructing injustice means having a victim willing and able to come forward and talk to the police about a criminal act which may have occurred and who the alleged perpetrator is. Obstructing that process is a crime. And the other one is intimidation of witnesses. And intimidation is broadly defined, Steve. It doesn't have to be, you know, if you testify, we're going to get Louie with a big baseball bat and, you know, hit you in the kneecaps a couple times. It can be far more subtle than that. And so you can intimidate in a whole variety of ways, and the courts have supported that. So I'm thinking to myself as I was hearing all about this, gee, that's really getting awfully close, if not over the line, to obstructing justice or intimidating witnesses. And then the question
is where that next part comes in. There are some complainants in here, according to the report, that said that they were pressured into not filing, and one said that she had her scholarship reduced through all of this.
Yeah, and you wonder, you know, how broad or deep is that, you know? And then what that becomes is criminal conspiracy. If you conspire with another person to pull back a scholarship, and the person that has the responsibility over scholarships is doing that, that broadens it, and it gets a whole other area of the Baylor University involved besides the athletic department.
I had John Solomon of CBSSports.com on the show a couple of days ago, mm-hmm. and John's been following this case closely, and I said, in related to this case, because Baylor is a private school, which you just talked about, mm-hmm. Bob, is it a lot more difficult for him to get the story as opposed to a state school where you can obviously use the Freedom of Information Act?
Yeah, or in Pennsylvania, we call that the Right to Know Act, Steve, which right. applies to public entities. And, of course, as you will recall, there was a huge hoo-ha at Penn State about whether Penn State fits into the Right to Know law involving a certain former football coach's compensation. And that went back and forth and was bandied about for quite some time. With a private school, you just tell them, you know, forget it. We're not revealing. There's no duty. There's no requirement. There's no statute can cover that would require Baylor to, first of all, release the coach's contract as a public document, B, release any investigations on the campus that have been involving the complainants and the people that are alleged to have been involved, any disciplinary actions, et cetera, that could sometimes, because the public interest outweighs privacy, could become part of the public domain, but not at a Baylor.
Right, exactly. No names were put in this report, but they did fire him. They're going to fire him. I mean,
yeah,
they
no
fired
question.
Him. They've suspended him with the idea of termination, is what they say, because they have to go through the contract. AD is suspended. Ken Starr, the president, moving yeah. from president to chancellor of the law school and so forth, and evidently some other people on the way.
Yeah, and it sounds
been,
like it's
have been fired because yeah. of this.
Yeah, and you know,
as
Pepper
a prosecutor,
Hamilton's
as
you Philadelphia
looked
law
at this
firm.
Play out, and we talked about the possibility of obstruction of justice.
Yeah,
would you then talk to people about, you know, again, this is the outside looking in, about pursuing obstruction of justice charges in this case against somebody, or at least investigating?
Well, I think so. I think if you're the police department down in Texas, where Baylor is situated, which whoever has that jurisdiction, certainly you'd really want to look into that. And you know, the law firm out of Philadelphia, Pepper Hamilton, they are actually developing a niche in their law firm of doing these kinds of internal university athletic department investigations. But the question is this. Will the Board of Trustees at Baylor University authorize Pepper Hamilton to release all of their investigative material to the local police department, the local district attorney down there? I think they certainly have the authority to do so, or they could just let it remain private. But that could be one of the things. I'm sure in the report that's been released is thousands of pages of background and documentation, et cetera, interviews. So there's plenty more in that file that could go to the local law enforcement.
And on a different note, but still on a legal note,
mm-hmm.
Former Penn State Athletic Director Tim Curley had the perjury charge against him dropped.
Yes.
In this process, I believe there's only one charge against Gary Schultz, Graham Spanier, and Tim Curley still there.
That's my understanding.
Can you give, from your perspective, where you see things and the importance of the perjury charge being dropped?
I thought the perjury charge, Steve, against Tim Curley should have been dropped when the other ones were. I'm not sure why it was not dropped. It was very...
The reason was that his attorney had not requested it at the time.
That's what I thought. I mean, it was inadvertent, the attorney for Mr. Curley, because otherwise I think the court would have done it on their own because they did it
yes.
against everybody else. So I thought that was something that should have just happened, and it was surprising to a lot of legal analysts that it hadn't happened. But now what is left is not a lot, and there's questions over whether the statute even applies to people up the chain of command in an organization in terms of endangering the welfare of children, which I believe is the remaining charge. How far up the ladder does that go? Is it the immediate supervisor or the supervisor's supervisor? Or in Spanier's case, it's three levels up. And I think that'll be the interesting question. And it may also result, again, in the charges being dismissed at some point. Or, Steve, I think the big thing that's going on is the Attorney General's office that's prosecuting this case, in my opinion, is in complete disarray.
Mm-hmm. One quick question on that.
Sure.
You talk about reporting up the chain and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the person in question was a retired employee and had not been employed by Penn State since December 31st, 99.
Right.
I mean, does that then apply here?
Well, that's a good question. I would say it. There is an application because at least one of the incidents happened on university property.
Okay.
So I think because of that, there's what we call in the law a nexus, a connection.
Okay.
So that a crime was alleged to have happened on university property, was witnessed by a university employee, it involved a child. And okay. The child was, you know, brought to the property even by a former employee. So I think the duty to report is there. So I don't think that. But one of the other huge developments, Steve, talking legal stuff, is that the new lawyers for Jerry Sandusky have raised a very, very interesting argument that the previous local lawyers did not. And I think it might have some traction. And here's what it is. The Sandusky case, as we know, was brought in front of a Pennsylvania duly convened grand jury. And it was a three-year process before the charges, the indictments, were announced. But grand juries can only be convened under limited basis, and they generally have to do with public corruption. And these new lawyers that Sandusky has representing him have challenged the original authority of the grand jury to even meet on a kind of a case like this because it didn't involve the types of cases that grand juries are supposed to investigate. So that, I think, is very interesting. The question is, did the original lawyers screw up and that issue is now waived because they forgot to challenge it when they should have? And if that's the case, then could they be considered to be ineffective lawyers because they failed to raise an issue that has legitimacy? So that is a really fascinating thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And you mentioned, by the way, in the failure to report charge, Tim Curley did report it to the Second Mile, which was Sandusky's employer.
Right, just so happens I have a friend named Bruce Castor, the former district attorney of Montgomery County. He has been appointed by the Attorney General to be what's given the title Solicitor General, which yes. means he's the de facto head of the Attorney General's office. He's a skilled and competent prosecutor, and he has raised the issue of let's go back and investigate the Second Mile, even though it's defunct, it's been closed down. Let's go back and investigate what they did or didn't do about this whole thing. And everyone that I've talked to, Steve, about the Sandusky case has always scratched their head saying, didn't the Second Mile have something to do with this? Isn't that where Jerry Sandusky went and found his victims? Aren't all the victims connected there? And what culpability did they have? So that is being looked at, you know, now many years later.
Bob, always an absolute pleasure. Dinner will be on me when you finally get here. Just let me know when you're here.
I would just enjoy it, Steve. Good to talk to you. I was really pleased that you had Doug Gottlieb warm up the office or the audience for me.
Doug told me, he says, if Buehner's on next, I'll do the show.
Exactly. I can understand his feelings.
Thanks, Bob. We'll talk soon, my friend.
All right, Steve. Take good care.
We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, Melo Trimble is going to return for his junior season to play basketball at Maryland. And let's get you up to date in that Pirates game. They were winning over Arizona in the ninth inning of that game. And in fact, they were comfortably in front. I thought they were up 8-3. And
that is your final. Pirates, 8-3. Yes, yeah, Buccos win.
8-3. And Toronto leads the Yankees 2-1, end of 3. Miami beat Tampa Bay 9-1. Oklahoma City, Golden State tonight, 9 o'clock. That's on TNT. Oklahoma City is up 3-1. Tampa Bay and the Penguins tonight. Lightning and Pens at Consol. Game 7, winner gets the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup Final. So, and of course, the big story is Art Briles fired today at Baylor. And Ken Starr, the president, reassigned to chancellor at the law school. He'll teach a class. Ian McCaw, the athletic director, is currently on suspension. But they fired Art Briles. The key part of the report is the part where football coaches and athletic staff met with victims. That's not your job. Right? You turn it over to law enforcement. I don't care whether it's campus police or the Waco police, depending on jurisdiction. And if she wants to file a report as a complainant and accuse someone of it, then let the process take place. And then you as the coach have to make a decision as to whether or not you suspend the player.